Well, tonight and for a couple weeks more after tonight, we're going to be looking at some really wonderful words of life from the 27th Psalm. And today what we're looking at is really important because it addresses the issue of scary people. And there are a lot of scary people in the world, you know? So it comes up all the time. You know a lot of this psalm by memory, so read it with me. Notice that we're going to skip from verse 1 to verse 3, just because I couldn't put it all on one slide, and I really needed this. So read it with me from the 27th Psalm. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Though an host should encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war should rise against me, in this will I be confident. All right, so as you can see, the crisis of the psalm, this is a psalm of David, by the way, the crisis of the psalm revolves around scary people. So he says, whom shall I fear? That's a person. You know, what person should I fear? In the next line, of whom should I be afraid? That's a person. The third bullet point there, though an host, a multitude should encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. So that's a multitude, an army of people, and I won't be afraid. And then lastly, that fourth bullet point there, though war should rise against me, this is a full-blown war, I will still be confident even in this time of war. So you can see it's all about enemies, people who threaten you, people who are able to do you harm and make life sort of scary. Well, this is the case for all of us. In normal human psychological development, almost all children are fearful. And so they're afraid of, you know, darkness, and they want a nightlight in their room, or they wake up their parents. Almost all children are fearful. Then we get a little older in life and we cease to be so fearful. By and large, people don't scare us as much. And when you're a teenager, you're invincible and nobody scares you because, you know, you're cocky and you just think you have the world by the tail. And so when you get to a certain age there in your teens and your early 20s, you are bulletproof. Nobody scares you. You're a tough guy, whatever. And then what happens is the rug gets jerked out from under you. This is done in a variety of ways. And what normally happens is by the time you get to be very elderly, almost everything scares you. I have a friend, you don't know this friend, I have a friend who is pretty much scared of everything. If something comes in the mail, he thinks it might be somebody trying to trick him into buying something he doesn't need or want. It'll be masked as something he must take care of, you know, legally, and he doesn't understand what he's reading. If somebody knocks on the door, he wonders if it's somebody who's trying to, you know, get information on him or somehow ask him for what he can't give. And almost everything scares him. Almost everybody is a threat to him. So you just see the stages of life. And what happens at some point, you know, our bravado is beaten down to the place where we think, uh-oh, I have become a fearful person. And that's normal. Almost every elderly person becomes fearful. So what do we do to keep ourselves from drifting on the one hand to the idea that, you know, I'm bulletproof, I'm invincible, nothing will ever happen? We don't want to live there because that's just not true. And we're supposed to think about the things that are true and honest and just and pure and lovely. And this is not true. Jesus said, in the world you shall have tribulation. So don't think, oh, I'm bulletproof. There's nothing bad that's ever going to come to me. That's not true. But on the other hand, you could drift the other direction. And all of a sudden, now you're afraid of everything. Jesus said, in the world, I'll have tribulation. Oh, no, no, no. What's going to become of me in a terrible world? And Jesus says, but be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. And I've always loved that. It doesn't say, in the world, you shall have tribulation and you're sunk. And it doesn't say, oh, cheer up, there's nothing to worry about. Neither extreme. It's, yes, there are a lot of things that threaten, but be of good cheer, I've overcome the world. And that's why I love this psalm, the 27th psalm, the opening of it in particular, because it is telling us how to deal with real life. And we don't want to be superficial and say, oh, I have the world by the tail. And we do not wish to be fearful. We want to be able to face life happily, cheerfully, confidently. And that's what this psalm is so great at. But there are scary people all around us. We don't want to become jaded and think, oh, the world is terrible. That's not good. But there are scary people all around us. So, for example, the people who threaten our favorite leisure activities. There are people who have neighbors who are kind of scary. You know, the neighbors complain because they don't like that your dog barks. They don't like that you parked your car too close to their yard. They don't like that you were being awfully noisy out there in the backyard. They have some kind of complaint about your leaves blowing into their yard or whatever is happening. And you can actually tremble to see these neighbors like, oh, no, there's going to be trouble again. Here comes Miss McGillicuddy. You know, what's wrong this time? And that some people move. They have to change their houses because they're just scared of their neighbors. It's constant conflict. Well, then there are the criminals who make us feel uncomfortable in our own neighborhoods. Like, you know, what's that all about? Why is that guy hanging out? What's he going to do? And so you just want to be at home. You don't want to think, oh, I have to watch the kids every minute because there's this guy over here lingering around. And yet a lot of us live in situations where that happens. You can't always live in the best neighborhood in town. You just have to live. And so there are scary people. That's just how life is. Scary people who threaten our finances. This comes up all the time. The coworker who competes with us for promotions and commissions. I still remember Teresa's dad talking about this when he was in the world of sales and how you could cultivate a relationship with a client for a long time and bring him right to the place where he's going to sign a contract. And then one of your coworkers swings in front of you, gets the contract signed, gets the commission. Like, ah, I have been shepherding this thing along for all this time. And then my coworker swoops in, grabs a commission. It's just like that. That gives him the financial advantage, and it gives him on the resume an advantage because he closed this wonderful contract that looks good for everyone. It's like, wow, it's hard to compete. And these people threaten your finances. The boss who overlooks all our good efforts and contributions. Maybe that's never happened to you. But it's the strangest thing when you realize, one time I had a job working in construction, and the main guy I worked with was the boss's son-in-law-to-be. Everything that was going to go well, he got the credit for. And so I could, you know, work my fingers to the bone. It wouldn't matter because Steve is going to get credit for it. And it's just discouraging. Like, well, how are you supposed to get ahead? I'm not family. How am I supposed to get ahead? And it's scary. You have a boss who's just not going to cut you a break. The banker whose decision changes the entire trajectory of our financial future. I mean, that's scary. I mean, this guy, from a human perspective, this guy has the ability to really help us or to hurt us. And I wonder what he's going to do. Violent and destructive criminals, again, who stalk our neighborhoods. You know, I didn't want somebody to come by and key my car or, you know, bang out the back window. It's a lot of trouble. I didn't want that to happen, and it affects my finances. The last one, businesses that threaten to send our jobs overseas. How many of you are in situations where contracts constantly change? You know, let's see if we get the contract this time. Don't know. And there's always the threat of another layoff, the threat of another contract coming due that you might not win. And just live with that. And these are scary people because the decisions they make can affect forever our financial futures on planet Earth. So there are scary people, and they can ruin your whole day. Scary people who threaten to undermine your most cherished relationships. Wicked peers, celebrities, and teachers who wish to poison our children against us. I was reading just recently about a school system in which the teachers were encouraging all of the children to cross-dress. I think, you know, what are they just trying to destroy our kids? Are they just trying to turn the kids against our faith and our Lord? I mean, what's going on here? We have the celebrities beating our kids down with their unusual messages. You have their peers doing it, and you even have their teachers doing it. And it's scary. You know, I didn't want you to turn my kids against me. And they're a scary people. Spouses who threaten to leave us or withdraw from us romantically. You know, a marriage has a huge impact on virtually everything else that takes place in your life. And sometimes, you know, the spouse threatens to leave or the spouse doesn't threaten to leave, but just withdraws, you know. I'm coming into the room, so she leaves the room. I'm going to such and such a place, so she's not going since I'm going. And they just withdraw romantically. That's pretty awful. And you think, you know, are you really going to sink this marriage? Are you really going to do that? And they have the ability to sink the marriage. And then another example of that, friends who threaten to abandon us because of conflict. Like, really, you're going to lock me out? We've been friends for 20 years, and we have this misunderstanding, and you're going to lock me out? Really? Why? I didn't want to lose that relationship. Why are you locking me out? And yet, there's not one thing you can do about it sometimes. So, scary people. One more kind of scary person. These tend to be a little more remote. But scary people all around us who threaten our national well-being. You know, we liked the old America. We didn't want it to go away. And there are people who have the ability to make it go away. So, for example, the voters and politicians who leave us vulnerable to real enemies while involving us in wars we don't believe in. So the real threats we're not addressing. The threats that we are addressing aren't even the ones that we particularly care about and see as threats. And so we send our people into harm's way unnecessarily, and a whole lot of other things that should be locked down and secured are left neglected. And that's, for those of you who are news hounds, you probably don't love that. That's probably pretty uncomfortable. Scary people. The voters and politicians who threaten to undermine our cherished American liberties, like our freedom to censure non-traditional family lifestyles. So you're saying I not only have to tolerate your alternative lifestyle, I'm supposed to endorse it. I'm supposed to advocate for it. I'm supposed to be an ambassador for it. And if I tell you my biblical traditional perspective, then I'm bad. Everybody can, you know, throw rotten tomatoes at me. That's just not really comfortable. And yet, that's how we find things. Our freedom to live among neighbors who share middle-class values and ethics. So you say, okay, well, if you all want to live like that, you stay where you are, and we're going to go over here and colonize with people who feel about things the same way we do. And then comes all the Section 8 housing. Say, no, we're going to put those people who are different from you in traditional family values, we're going to stick them right in your neighborhood and get them in your face, and you can't get away from them. You're not going to let me colonize with people who have similar class values? Like, nope, we're not going to let you. Well, that's scary. You know, that's not the America we wanted. And we have powerful people who are able to affect that freedom. One more time, our freedom to choose where our charitable money is donated as opposed to welfare. So I'm going to give away my money to the poor people. But these are the poor people who, when I said, I don't think you should have an alternative lifestyle, they scream at me, leave me alone, you hypocrite. And then, when their finances fall apart, which is a statistical inevitability, then they scream at me again as a taxpayer, rescue me, you hypocrite. Like, so I had to leave you alone when it came time for advice, but then dive in and rescue you when you ran out of money. That's not very comfortable for most of us. And they're big, scary people who impose that thing on us And there's really not much we can do about it. So we have lots of threats. Threats coming from every direction. And we really don't feel comfortable with this. So our choices are, we could become the old person who's always afraid. Pretty much just afraid of everybody. You know, what are those young guys doing over there under the street lamp? I'm afraid of that. What's happening in the news? I'm afraid of that. You just become afraid of everything. Or you can hear the psalm that talks about, yeah, lots of bad, scary people. A host, you know, a multitude, an army of scary people. But you don't have to be afraid. So are you tracking with me? Does that raise any questions or observations? There's a lot to be scared of in the world. We need a cure. Desi. Yeah, Desi's talking about one time an intruder at her door trying to come in. And the Lord reminded her of the Bible verse, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and a sound mind. And it just calmed her. And so it's not like Jesus said, you know, be of good cheer. There's not a thing in the world wrong. No, a guy's trying to come in my house. But be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. You're going to be okay. And that's right. We're not foolish. We're not blind. We see the host against us. But it no longer is troubling. It no longer is distressing to see it. And that's really, you can't cure the country. You can't cure your neighborhood. You can't necessarily cure your school system or whatever is threatening you. You can't cure your neighbor. But the Lord has a way to cure your heart. And if your heart is cured, then that's the important thing. That's what you need to have a foundation of love and joy and peace that nothing shakes. And so we look for the Lord's cure of the heart more than the cure of the neighborhood, the nation, whatever it is we're talking about. So, good. All right, so we could easily fear all these many people, but the psalm says, whom shall I fear? Of whom shall I be afraid? My heart shall not fear. I will be confident. So you could, I mean, we understand why people would sort of freak out and become fearful, phobic, but the biblical ideal is that we would not do that. We won't be afraid, and we will have confidence, and that's why this is so wonderful. David had lots of times in his life when there was, you know, a literal army against him, and the Lord had to help him so he wouldn't be afraid. All right, so why do we not need to fear all the scary people in our world? The first one is from the opening of Psalm 27, the Lord is my light and my salvation. He's my light. So last time we talked about the meaning of light in Scripture and light as opposed to darkness. Last time we said, I live every day in the chaotic atmosphere of darkness. Darkness being threat of death, sadness, confusion, evil. Darkness is all of those things in Scripture. Death, confusion, evil, sadness. And that's always threatening. None of that ever goes away. That's the darkness of the world. So there's always going to be darkness in this world until Jesus makes everything right. That's just the nature of our world. Men love darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. So the Lord is my light. And what we're saying here is the Lord isn't necessarily going to take away all the bad, scary people. But he is your light, even if there's a host, an army, encamped against you, then he still gives you light. In that situation, he still gives you light. He didn't take away the threatening army. He left the threatening army there, but he gave you light. And light then would be life, you were spared, joy instead of sadness, righteousness instead of evil, clarity instead of confusion. And the Lord is the author of all of that. So he doesn't take away the army that threatens you. He gives you light. And with that light, you're going to be okay. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Does that raise any questions or observations, Josiah? Yeah, if there were not another world, Josiah is saying there is no reason for an atheist to feel encouraged because at best, he's going to live to be 85 years old, approximately healthy. And then he's going to die. And as far as he knows, as an atheist, that's all there is. We know that that's not true. But the progression, I remember, I always wanted to document this. I lost it, and I really liked it so much. About 10 years ago, there was this lady who was, matter of fact, this might have been 20 years ago. She was very important in the hippie movement. And the great thing about the hippie movement was, there's a youth movement, you know, everybody was a kid. And then she was 60 years old, and so she was, you know, an early adapter. And then she's 60 years old, and she's being interviewed about her life. And now she's just an old, not attractive woman. And she lamented with the journalist there in the interview. She said, "I've become a codger." And it's true. That's what happens in life. And you see all of the little graphics from time to time. You have the baby, and he has no teeth and no hair, and he can't walk and he can't talk. And then you have the very, very elderly person. He has no teeth, he has no hair, he can't walk anymore, and if he has Alzheimer's, he can't even talk anymore. So it is reasonable, if there is no other world, as Solomon says, life in this world under the sun, if all we have is what's under the sun, then it is reasonable to be despairing. The only reason a good atheist is not in constant despair is that he refuses to let him think, and let himself think about what awaits him at the end of this thing that we call human life, when you're old and your body begins to malfunction and that's the end. If only he would think about it, you know. If only he would follow to its logical conclusion where this is taking him, then he would be despairing, and then he might be interested in another world. But he refuses to go there. Well, at any rate, the Lord is my light, and it is only a workable light for Christians who believe in another world. The Lord is my light and my salvation. We don't have to be afraid of all the scary people in the world. We're not saying that there aren't a lot of scary people in the world, a lot of scary people in Washington, a lot of scary people in the halls of the Ivy League. We know there are a lot of scary people in the world, but we don't have to be afraid of them because the Lord is our salvation. He is my salvation. And never forget, salvation is just rescue. So we have not only the big, you know, rescue from the lake of fire forever, but we have all of these little rescues. When the Lord comes in and he just fixes our problem, he doesn't always fix the problem here in life just the way that we might prefer. Sometimes the scary people are still scary. You know, in the whole political culture wars, remember there's a time like in 1976, the nation's bicentennial and creeping into the Reagan era. And a lot of Christians thought, you know what? We're going to be able to turn this country around. We might just pull this off. And the Christians were very excited about that moral majority and all those things. Like, wow, I think we might just have what it takes to turn this around. And then we didn't. And pretty soon, all the major players, James Dobson et al., Cal Thomas, they begin to say, uh-oh, in these culture wars, we have lost every single battle that we've ever begun. We wanted to turn abortion around. We couldn't do it. We wanted to at least say no partial birth abortion. We really couldn't do that. We wanted to turn around the whole homosexual thing and traditional marriage. And no, we lost that one. We just lose everything. It takes us sometimes a long time to lose, but we lose everything. So the scary people have not gone away. When David says, though there were an host, you know, an army encamped against me. And that's kind of where we live. But the Lord is our rescuer. And sometimes he takes away the army, all the bad guys, they go away. And sometimes they're still there. But it gives us a chance to showcase our love and loyalty to the Lord, to have an opportunity to fight valiantly and earn eternal rewards. And that's okay. In a way, that's a rescue. He has made us great soldiers in a great battle. And we have the opportunity to really do well for him. And that is wonderful. Maybe that's better than just making all the enemies go away. AJ. Yeah. That darkness metaphor in Scripture is very powerful, because if you've been in... When I was a kid, did you ever do this? Our friend had a toy box, and we would get in the toy box, and then a friend would slam the lid and sit on it, and you had to see if you could, you know, not freak. And not, obviously it's safe. You know, it's not like the box is going to collapse or anything. But it's like, oh, I'm not comfortable with this. Darkness just is not comfortable. It's kind of cool, but it's a little scary. Desi, very right. Desi was mentioning a few people, Richard Vernbrand, Brother Andrew, people who laid their lives on the line for the Lord. And in the case of, you know, Jim Elliott, the rescue was to help him to finish his race so wonderfully well that he was eternally rewardable. And what could be better than that? I mean, would Jim Elliott say, oh, please, you know, take away all the bad guys? Or we say, no, I just want to run well. And hopefully that's how we'd all feel about it. Just, Lord, let me be great. I just want to do a good job. All right. I always love this, of course, from Romans chapter 8. You know, what can separate us from the love of Christ? Tribulation, distress, famine, nakedness, peril, or sword? Because we are getting killed all the day long. We are counted as sheep for the slaughter. We're like sheep lined up to kill and butcher. So does that separate us from the love of Christ? And the answer is no. In all these things, famine, nakedness, peril, sword, these things, in those things, we're still conquerors. And so that in itself is a rescue, right? That's a salvation. If we are conquerors, even if we are accounted as sheep for the slaughter, then that is rescue. It's not rescue in the sense that the enemies went away, but it's rescue in the sense of having a grand life part. Shakespeare said, all the world is a stage. He said the performance was a tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury signifying nothing. You know how I want that to be? All the world is a stage, a tale told by a genius. That's God. God is writing the story. And if we get to the end of our lives and we are Jim Elliott, or we are Richard Vernbrand, who had to suffer so much, or any of the martyrs, or even just those who ran hard and well, that is a tale told by a genius. You know, bring on the suffering. I'm saying that carefully. If the Lord wants us to have scary people around us, then okay. You know, this, all the world is a stage, and it's a tale told by a genius. I'm for it. Let's go. Then, and this is my favorite line in the psalm, and we only have a moment, so I can't linger here. But the Lord is the strength of my life. Don't you love that idea? The Lord is the strength of my life. That phrase is very poignant. The Lord is the strength of my life. And you can see that'd be offensive strength, like, you know, strength to take it to the enemy, strength to do the next thing. Now, for example, in Daniel 11:1, Gabriel, addressing Daniel, says, in the first year of Darius the Mede, even I stood to confirm and strengthen him. So it's like this military commander is getting angelic help to beat down Babylon because Babylon was so evil. But anyway, you can see that strength to take the battle to the enemy. That's offense. And it can be defense, which might be the emphasis here, but maybe not necessarily. In Psalm 31:2, you have definitely a defensive idea. Bow down thine ear to me, deliver me speedily. Be thou my strong rock for a house of defense. So we definitely have a defense idea there. The strong rock, the fortress. Let this be my castle. Let this be my stronghold, my safe place. So the Lord is the strength of my life. He's my castle. He's my stronghold, my safe place. That's defense. But also offense. The Lord is the one who helps me to take the battle to the enemy. He gives me the initiative to go forward and to shoot straight and to somehow avoid the fiery darts. He's helping me. At the bottom of that slide, you see we're reminded that we all crave security. Everybody wants security. We just want to be okay. And the Lord is our light and our salvation. He's our security. You're going to be okay. And we all crave meaning. That is, it matters that I was born one day and I lived on planet Earth. It matters. I want to know that it matters. We crave that. We all want that to be the case. And, of course, that's assured in the creation. The Lord doesn't create junk. And in redemption, Jesus doesn't die for junk. So, obviously, you have meaning. But this one, in particular, is what the Lord is the strength of my life reminds me of. We crave ability. We all want to say, I can do something. I can succeed at something. I can accomplish something. It's one thing for the Lord to say, well, I just love you and you're a total loser and you can't do anything right. But we'd also like, but even though you're a total loser and you can't do anything right, I just think you're cute. You're like my pet. Like, oh, yeah. But you know what? I'd really like to do something, to show a little talent, a little usefulness in the kingdom. And we crave that. That's what this verse is saying. The Lord is the strength of my life. The Lord is the strength of my life. Because he's in me, the Lord is in my life. He's in my body. Because he's in me, there is this, glow emanating from me, a talent, an ability, a calling. And I can go to the enemy. I can do something in life that matters. I want to be okay. Lord, am I going to be okay? Sure. The Lord is my light and my salvation. You're going to be okay. And I want to know that it matters that I've lived. Sure. The Lord doesn't die for junk. It matters that you live. You're important. And I want to know that I can do something, that I can accomplish something. I'm not just treading water here. And that's what this verse says. The Lord is the strength of my life. He's the strength of my life. If he's the strength of my life, then my life is strong indeed. So here's the conclusion. There are plenty of people in this world that we could all be afraid of. But the 27th Psalm insists that such fear is ultimately irrational and groundless. The Lord lights our darkness with his grace. He saves us from all our enemies at the end of the story. And he's the strength that makes us glow and prosper in the midst of an entire host of scary people. I don't think the Lord is going to remove the scary people in Washington. I think they're here to stay. As a matter of fact, I think there are going to be a bunch more of them in the next decade. And I don't think the Lord's going to remove the scary people that encroach our neighborhoods and try to teach our children things that are totally against what we stand for. I don't think they're going to go away. As a matter of fact, I think they're going to increase. But that doesn't mean that we all have to be afraid, because the Lord is our light and our salvation. He's the strength of our lives. And if an entire army encamped against us, we're still going to be okay. Of whom then shall I be afraid? Answer is, nobody. Not an entire army. You don't have to live in fear.